previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
I can't believe I'm going to ask this, but could we just watch Yoga Hosers again?
So I've been telling you that the idea of the fragrant vagrant is like a perfume, but to make you smell not so good.
Well, fine. I'll start my own damn Renaissance Festival.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Eric Sandin.
And together, we're actually a post-industrial festival. Get ready for some coal, bitches!
Okay, I know I've been missing the show for a while, but is that what we switched to?
To coal?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's clean coal, though, so it's okay.
We kind of like the steampunk vibe, but not going with the futuristic park.
Yes.
So less steam, more coal.
Yeah.
Is there a coal punk movement?
Steam is generated.
Yeah.
Do you not know how steam engines work?
Not anymore, obviously. I'm like, wait.
They use coal.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I was thinking like...
Use a coal to heat the boiler, which then generates the steam.
Well,
you know, okay, that steam doesn't just happen, right?
I was thinking wood fire, as dumb as that sounds, but
anyway, you could do that too.
Today, not knowing how to power a steam engine, today on this day, I am not ashamed because I have nothing to do with that in real life. So, fuck it.
Well, to be fair, I've covered how steam engines work for my
I was going to say, so. Jonathan probably wrote the article.
Yeah, there's a chance it's an article, a podcast, a video special, the future of steam engines.
Yep.
It's all done by Jonathan Strickland. So, I mean, I'm sure if I was I'm not anywhere as qualified as Jonathan to speak about anything except the movie we watched for the show.
Are Satanic. You qualified to talk about it?
I watched
it. Well, he chose it.
Yeah, all right.
So we should point out
notes.
Oh, go ahead, Ayaz. Go ahead, Ayaz. Sorry.
Oh, I was saying no. I took notes on paper this time.
Oh wow!
So I was like, forget it. I'm not going to even have the option of little pop ups to distract me.
So I have it. 5 pages of notes. So,
one
typed.
I do not. I have just like chicken scratch because I was like slightly in the dark. So like all my line stuff is a mess. But I've got like 4 pages of notes.
All right. Do you want to do the thing where one of us reads it and the other one occasionally butts in, or the other two butt in?
I would suggest that Jonathan, you've got unless you've got notes.
I do not have the notes Jonathan has, apparently.
So before we jump into this at all, 2 things. One is that Ayaz picked this film off air because he had a very busy week, so he ended up choosing this while we were off the air. We said that's fine. He came back with a couple of choices. Actually, we could have watched Avalanche Sharks or we could have watched Satanic, and neither Eric nor myself gave much interest in either. Like, we didn't care really. It was could be one or the other. It didn't matter. Yeah, and then eventually like, do you watch a really shitty Satanic horror movie, or do you watch a really shitty, like, semi spoof monster movie? So I eventually chose Satanic because neither of us were any help at all to him. But I think that's only fitting considering he left us to cover the previous movie all by ourselves, which was Ejecta. Did you ever watch that, Ayaz?
I have not seen Ejecta. I have not.
God, I should have just agreed with Eric that neither of us would watch this movie and have you do the whole thing again.
But
it will save me some heartache. So anyway, Ayaz picked the film. And Ayaz, why don't you explain what we do? Why we're talking about movies in the first place?
Okay, so on this program, for some reason, for like 100 and some odd episodes, we challenged ourselves because we're so connected in our daily lives. We wanted to see if any one of us could watch a movie without a second screen, without being a wise ass, without having wise ass commentary next to you, without alcohol. Could we dedicate 100% of our attention to a movie? And most of the times we pick really shitty movies on Netflix, sometimes on Amazon, sometimes bizarre things. And we see how long we go before we resort to a second screen or any of those other distractions. And we don't have to finish the movie. because there's really no true winner to this. You know, if you watch the whole thing without a break, did you win? I don't know, because these movies have been terrible. That's a not about the
you definitely do not win in the case of Satanic. Mm-mm. I can say that with 100% certainty. I did watch the whole movie, but I only got 14 minutes in before I paused it the first time. How about you guys?
So I was at work, but I made it 45 minutes in while doing basically, like, I think I was paying pretty good attention to it, which meant there was really nothing going on.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you didn't have to pay attention to this. 30 minutes, 16 seconds, I say aloud, how many fucking days are they going to be out there in California? So that's when I actually kind of broke.
Yeah, the answer to that is like 4, we think, maybe. All right, so Satanic, the film. Here are the notes I have. I said, so hey.
Do you want to give the short recap of what the... Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so a group of 4 friends, or rather... 4 individuals who can tolerate each other's existence to some extent are on their way to Coachella. But first they have a 2-day layover stop in Los Angeles because 2 of the friends are goth wannabes who want to visit various landmarks that have some sort of significance in satanic circles or Charles Manson, which doesn't completely overlap with the satanic circles, but never mind that. And then they run into problems when they actually inadvertently get involved with real satanic shit. The end.
Yeah.
And then they all die. And they all die. They all die. Spoiler alert. They're all dead. So
that's the end of mine. Shit happens and they all die.
Yeah. Pretty much. Right. So here are the notes I have. It's like, so, hey, this movie features 4 protagonists who represent the sort of people I despise. I can't wait for them all to be sacrificed. Let's go through them, shall we? We've got Christian frat boy who is humoring his girlfriend, but clearly doesn't want to be on this trip. I can't blame him. The trip is lame. Frat boy is also lame, but in a different way from the other lamos. Boyfriend's name is David. We've got girlfriend, who I suspect is our main protagonist. She's cousin to Miss Hot Topic 2014. She's almost completely devoid of personality. Her name is Chloe, although I think they just call her Chloe in the movie.
Yeah.
We've got Miss Hot Topic 2014, who dresses in black, thinks other people who dress in black have a great look, thinks that her interest in the macabre makes her cool. It doesn't. And says stuff like, this is spine-tinglingly awesome, unironically. I hate her so much. I think her name is Elise. Then there's Seth, the Asian goth asshole who is neck and neck with Elise to be named lamest of the lamos. He also looks like he fell out of a Hot Topic. These 4 assholes are on their way to Coachella, and I'm old, so this is one of the reasons I hate them. But then I hate all big outdoor music festivals because I find them tedious and unpleasant. So there's that. But Elise and Seth want to take 2 days to tour various spots in Los Angeles related to murders and Satanism. And I swear, it seems like the screenwriters essentially read a few Wikipedia entries on Satanism and then wrote out this script. Maybe the point is the characters are super shallow and have no clue about the history of the Church of Satan, but I doubt it's that deftly handled. It really does feel like they looked at the Cliff's notes to things like the satanic verses and stuff like that, as opposed to having any real information about this subculture. The first stop is a street called Santa Fe. And they see a building that has a woman in the window screaming, and then they drive off. This will become important later. So we're getting some Anton LaVey stuff, some Charles Manson stuff, and some generic Satanism stuff. Oh, and the group is staying in a hotel where ritualistic suicide happened in the 1970s. Lainey Gore is the name of the suicide. The 4 encounter 2 real Satanists, also of the Hot Topic variety, who turn out to be not very nice. Go figure. Satanists aren't super happy fun time people after all. This is already tiresome to me. So are Elise and Seth going to be revealed as Satanist wannabes who can't handle the real thing? Spoiler alert. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Then I wrote, I hear there's a twist in this film. So at this point, I actually had gone to IMDb. This is already like 14 minutes in. I went to IMDb just to get the goddamn names of the characters because I wasn't paying enough attention to pick them up from the film. So I go on IMDb and then I say, I hear there's a twist in this film. So maybe they don't turn out to be wannabes. Maybe it turns out they're in on it. Ooh, or maybe frat boy David is secretly in on it. That'd be a hell of a twist. Spoiler alert, it's not that good.
None of that.
So after going to a few places like the Tate Mansion, as in where Charles Manson family murdered Sharon Tate and several others, where Manson's family members committed several murders, the foursome duck into a Satanist bookshop. And I hate this movie even more for trying to make this seem spooky. So the bookshop, one of the issues I have with this movie is the soundtrack. They try really hard. Well, two reasons. One, the score tries really hard to make things seem creepy when they're just kind of lame. And yeah. Two, all the actual songs in the soundtrack suck ass.
Yeah.
Unless you guys think they were awesome.
Nope. That's definitely let's get to that.
Let's talk about that book, that bookstore, the occult store. Yes, what please I have is my notes.
Yeah. And it's
Exactly. It's so not scary. The kids go into there. They act all frightened because there's like these, there's a hand that belonged to a child molester and murderer. And then there's,
but he wasn't a Satanist. He wasn't a Satanist. He was just a child molester and a murderer,
which is very important to point out. They do point that out. We see some other like odd things in the store that is, and one of the weirder things is it's not lit very well. So some of the stuff I think that I was supposed to see, I didn't see. So the movie got really tense with the music, and they're walking around a shop, and I was like, "Oh, this is like heebie-jeebies, like over in Petaluma. It's not that exciting."
This is the point where the Elise character, Miss Hot Topic 2014, says, "This is spine tinglingly awesome" in a non-ironic way. She also picks up a book of incantations written in Coptic, and she's told that she is not ready for that by the shop owner, who manages to be to look down his nose at these goth wannabes because he's the real thing. You can tell because he has an upside down cross tattooed on the back of his head. The shop's owner, who dismisses the satanic panic as a myth, except it wasn't a myth. It totally happened, in that people were flipping out about Satanism in the 1980s. I know, because I lived through that. I remember lots of people flipping out about supposed satanic cults left and right. Now, maybe what he meant to say, or maybe what the screenwriters meant, was that the panic wasn't about Satanism at all, which is really true. The panic was about, you know, adults just freaking out that kids are so different these days. And they would blame anything on, you know, any apparent behavior, they would blame on whatever they could, like Dungeons and Dragons, rock music, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe that's what he meant when he said the satanic panic was a myth. But if he meant that the actual panic about Satanism was a myth, that's not true. It was totally there. The vast majority of said flipping out was completely unjustified, et cetera, et cetera. Seth, the Asian goth guy, peeks in the back of the shop and sees something he shouldn't. The shop owner threatens to kill him. So he dumps some merchandise on the floor before heading out like a bitch. Jeez, I can't wait for him to die. I wish that I was telling my wife about this. One of the biggest problems I have with this movie is that they don't follow your typical horror movie plot, because in a typical horror movie plot, at least one of these motherfuckers would be killed halfway through the movie. And then typically the others would start to drop off. But no, you've got to wait through the whole goddamn movie before these assholes start dying. And it is excruciating, especially with Seth. He is easily the most irritating, or at least in my opinion, the most irritating character in this movie. Now we get generic Los Angeles tourist montage, including a Walk of Fame and Santa Monica. That means that the guys, the group of four, after exploring the world of Satanism and mass murder, decide to wander around and see the sights. Seth suggests that they follow the shop owner. They're out on the beach and Seth is like, "Hey, let's go find that asshole and follow him and see where he goes."
Who does that? Who like, I never See, got that part. Like, my line is like, oh, wait, now they're going to stalk this dude. What? Who makes that decision? Like,
now, in my notes, yeah. I have Elise gets the idea to follow the guy from the occult shop. So it's either Elise or it's Seth, but it's one of these two asshole wannabe goth kids because there's nothing yeah. else to do yeah. in L.A. I mean, maybe. I've been in L.A. a couple times. There's shit to do, you know?
yeah. Yeah. They could easily yeah. find more murder sites in L.A. It's not they like could they go hang. I mean,
yeah, they could go hang out in front of the Viper Room if they wanted to. Actually, I don't even know if that's still there. But anyway, I have it where it was Seth, and Elise is totally on the same page. So maybe one suggested it and the other one picks it up or whatever. But yes, both of them are into it. And then surprisingly, I have this note. David, the frat boy Christian guy, completely yeah. out of character, sides with Seth and Elise and says they should follow yeah.
he's,
the shop
he's all
owner.
For it.
This is out of nowhere. Like, there's nothing about his character that would suggest he would do this.
There is. So during that LA montage scene where they're just kind of sitting around at the beach and they're coming up with this stupid idea, Chloe yells at him at some point. He's like, be a free spirit, have an open mind. And it's not till right after that she says that. He's like, yeah, I'll go and do this. And Chloe's like yeah. horrified when she's like, he goes with this. It's her fault. Or I was hoping for the monstrous twist of, hey, this David guy, there's something up with him. There isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that again, like that would have been kind of clever to have the one guy who's wearing a regular cross, it's not even fucking upside down or anything, to turn out to be like the actual Satanist. That would have been interesting. It would have been weird. We would have had to have seen some exploration of the backstory to understand how he got involved in this in the first place, because he clearly didn't have the idea to do this. He's going along because he's dating Chloe. Chloe is cousin with Elise, and Chloe wants to humor Elise and Seth by extension. No one seems to like Seth for good reason. He's an asshole. He's consistently making horrible decisions through the entire movie to the point where you wonder why anyone tolerates his presence in the first place. But yeah, I guess maybe to satisfy Chloe, but it doesn't play off that way to me. To me, it just seemed like David's like, you're right, we are bored. Because Chloe is clearly upset with this idea. She's the one who says, guys, maybe Definitely. We shouldn't do this. But yeah. then David's like, no, we should do this. So if he was trying to satisfy Chloe, you would think he would immediately flip-flop again and say like, oh, honey, you're right. We shouldn't chase after the shopkeeper. I don't know what I was thinking. Sorry, baby.
That is a good point. And also, I think you just demonstrated more acting range than David has throughout the movie, because I'm pretty sure 95% yeah. of the time, he's just kind of sitting there with his mouth open. A lot of scenes with David also, going...
We should also point out that these guys are all supposed to be college students. They're on spring break, and David appears to be in his mid-30s. So then I have the four douchebags stake out the shop owner and follow him when he gets in a truck after closing up. Another guy's driving the truck. He jumps in. They drive off. And then the guys in their van go after, tailing the truck. Yep. Then we see how excited and happy they are to follow this guy. Like it's a shot of all four of them smiling and laughing
yep.
as they tail this truck, even though they have no clue what they'll do once they get to wherever the dude is going. And I hate them even more.
One of my favorite scenes was in this part where they're, you know, driving and somebody says, you know, there's a red light or whatever. Somebody says, floor it, run the red. They're all excited to do this. And in the shot, there's another car driving right next to them as they yeah. go through the supposed red light.
Well, in Los Angeles, everyone runs red lights. It's not
right. Yeah.
Red lights are just, they're more what you call guidelines. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have then the Satanists who are driving in this white truck have a headlight out, but they also signal before turning. So they aren't all bad. Actually, I would argue that also sets them apart from all other people in Los Angeles, because they actually use their turn signal. I laughed out loud when I saw it happen, because this truck with only one headlight's coming down a road, and then there's this dirt road off to the side, and the blinker comes on, and I laughed out loud. I was like, at least the Satanists are considerate. I mean, there's not even, as far as they know, anyone behind them, but they're like, we should signal.
Yeah,
just good practice.
Yeah, The douchebags tail the Satanists to a house. They get out of their van. The douchebags get out of their van to get a closer look and do almost, but not quite, next to nothing to avoid being seen or heard. So it's like you have a family of drunken elephants walking up to this house. They are the least stealthy, and they have like a flashlight that they're shining at the fucking house as they walk up to it. This is the same house that has a shopkeeper who has previously threatened to kill one of them with a knife, which he had in his hand at the time.
Yeah, so it's also, oh, no. It's pitch blackout. It's pitch blackout at this point, and when they're holding the flashlight, it's not like it's, you know, low to the ground or something. It's around shoulder height, facing outwards. So if anybody in the house, in that area, just happened to look in the darkness in such a direction, you would notice this because it's completely pitch blackout.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So they all seem pretty cavalier about sneaking up to the house, with the exception of Chloe, who urges caution, which everyone ignores because fuck this movie. So they spy on a satanic ritual of some sort where they see, so they're right up there at the house. They find a way to look in and they see a big gathering of people in robes. They see a woman get disrobed so that she's topless. Then one of the Satanists who was in the back of the shop earlier, the guy who was in the back when Seth was peeking in the back of the shop, he holds up a knife as if he's going to cut the lady. Chloe yells out to stop whatever is about to happen. Topless girl shoves knife dude. And then David suddenly yells too, because he sure is a stand-up dude. Pretty sure he's Satan. Also, Seth and David are completely obsessed with boobs. Apparently they are both 13. So when the woman gets disrobed, Seth and David are both like, oh, check out her rack. You know, again, ignoring the fact that there's more than a dozen people there. They're trespassing on someone else's property. There's more than a dozen people there, one of whom has already threatened their lives. Like, no, there's a titties, man. There's titties. So shop owner pulls out a shotgun. And then finally, our characters get a sense of urgency that perhaps they should not be there. And the four make an unconvincing attempt to escape. Seriously, they very slowly get out of frame in that first shot. And then they're running across the yard to the van. So they're looking like through an unfinished wall of this house. So it's like wooden, it's like a wood frame, but the siding hasn't been put up. And when the guy pulls out the gun, they're all trying to get away, but there must have been like construction shit all over the place back there, because it is the slowest, most awkward shot of them leaving the frame at that point. And then they're running to the van. They escape. So that's it. Like nothing of consequence happens. Seth realizes he's dropped his phone back at the house, because of course he has, and he says they should go back to get it because it has, quote, viral all over it. Seth, there is no way there's anything remotely interesting on your phone.
That's what he says. So Seth is also, he's recording the ritual as it's happening. Yes. So he's saying, they have it on the phone, and I didn't know what he had said to make them want to go back, or at least to try to pitch them go back there, because all sense says leave the phone and maybe go to the stupid concert. Just go to Coachella, go away. Just don't stay. But
the scene where they're running away, my initial note was, wait, they're running away. Does nobody care about the girl? We just don't care that they were trying to kill the girl, as far as we know at this point.
I think dude with shotgun trumps topless girl.
Okay, fair enough, but you know, that could have easily been a reason to circle back or tell the cops.
Right. Yeah, the phone is a reason to go back, not to make sure the girl is okay. Yes, you're exactly right there. David, you know, frat boy Christian dude, argues that not only were they trespassing, but they also can't be sure what they saw was really going to be a sacrifice, nor can they be certain the girl was in danger. So Chloe's upset because she's saying they were going to kill that girl. And David says, actually, we don't know that. David, by the way, is totally fucking right. They don't know what was going to happen. And as it turns out later on, you discover that it wasn't going to be a sacrifice. So David is 100% correct in this assessment, where he tells Chloe, we can't be sure that what you say it was going to happen is actually what was going to happen. So you are freaking out about something that you have no knowledge about. Chloe, however, is absolutely convinced she's right. Now, we're supposed to root for Chloe. She's supposed to be the main protagonist of this film. But she's already made some bad decisions, and she will continue to do such, because her next really bad decision is what ultimately leads to all of them being killed.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Really, the lesson here is Chloe was a dumb, dumb, dumb bitch. And I mean bitch in the sense of she was fucking goading everybody all the time. Like she convinces David, hey, you've got to give my friends a chance. Her friends being the ones that lead them down this pathway in the first place. Then she's the one who says, no, we should check on this girl because they were totally going to kill her. That's why I screamed out when she didn't know that for a fact. And then she makes the fatal decision in just a moment. So Elise's phone starts ringing with a lousy song as the ringtone. There are a lot of lousy songs in this movie, actually. Chloe picks up Elise's phone. It's a lady named Alice. So we have Elise and Alice. That makes life easy. And Alice has found Seth's phone. She is the girl who was apparently going to be sacrificed the night before. And she calls Elise because that was the last number that was dialed from that phone. So the four arrange to meet up with Alice at a coffee shop. Alice okay, returns. So yeah.
Sorry, before you say that. So I was writing my notes and like, okay, it's the girl on the phone is the girl who's stripped and they're going to meet up and have coffee. And I wrote that down before it happened because I thought it was just a stupid thing that would happen. And they literally are at a coffee shop and Alice is having like a really fancy iced drink and they're having regular coffee. I'm just like, okay, I guess that's modern, but it was a dumb joke. You think they'd meet somewhere, you know, more abandoned, a little scarier than the coffee shop that just everyone was able to get to.
Yeah, it wasn't even a big chain.
I mean, it's hard to Uber to abandoned buildings, so Alice needed somewhere to easily go, you know.
Yeah. So Alice returns the phone after Seth says the magic word, which is please, and explains that she wasn't being sacrificed, but rather being excommunicated from the group because she, quote, wouldn't do what they wanted, end quote. Seth continues to be a douchebag. I don't even remember what Seth was doing at this point. I just have it that he was being a douchebag. Chloe convinces the group they should take in Alice. This is the decision that leads to all of their deaths. So every decision Chloe makes in this movie is a bad one. Chloe is stupid.
Not to mention the fact that it's like the Satanist on her anymore. You probably don't want to be her friend. It's not a good decision.
she was being kicked out by a group of Satanists. Obviously, this is the sort of person we should bring to our hotel room.
Right.
So it says Chloe convinces the group they should take in Alice, which I'm pretty sure will be an incredibly bad decision. Bingo on that one. She actually guilt trips the rest of them to do it. So no one else in the group wants to take in Alice. They're all like, no, she's going to be fine. She said she's going to find her way back to some other town. Let her do that. Let's finish out our time here and go to fucking Coachella.
Yep.
But no, Chloe's like, come on, guys. She could use our help.
They go outside and Alice is just like sitting on a bus stop at a bench. And David's like, she's at the bus stop. And then Chloe's the one's like, she's not going to take the bus with no backing. There is no reason why Chloe should jump to this conclusion. She's not going to take the bus. Well, she's at the fucking bus stop. Maybe she is. But anyway, she continues to guilt him. That's how they end up together.
The sum total that they know about Alice at this point is that she was in a group of Satanists. They were excommunicating her. And she had Seth's phone. That's it. That's all they know about her. We should take her in.
To be fair, she is nice enough to return Seth's phone. They were supposed to be playing in that scene, but it really didn't come off that way. No. Yeah. Maybe they just assumed. I mean, she brought the phone back. Must be a nice person,
right? Like, how could a a instrument of evil, bring back someone's smartphone. She guilt trips the rest of them to do it. Chloe does to take in Alice. So they take her back to the hotel, the one where they're staying in the room where Lainey Gore committed suicide in an effort to try and summon Satan. She seems to know a lot. Alice seems to know a lot about the Gore suicide, almost as if she were there. And then they ask her, like, how do you know about this? It's not like you were there. She says that Gore didn't slit her own throat, which was the legend, but rather slit her wrists and used that to try and draw satanic symbols on the wall, which everyone, for some reason, feels compelled as soon as they walk into this room to go to the wall where the symbols were drawn and put their hand up on the wall. Everyone is got a compulsion to do this when they first walk in, apparently. Not really, but that's what you get like from watching this film. It just seems that way. So they say, like, how did you know this? You weren't there. And then she shows them that she has scars on her wrist where she tried to commit suicide. By the way, that doesn't explain how she fucking knows what happened to Lainey Gore.
Yeah. See, with that, for some reason, I'm like, okay, is Alice Lainey Gore? Because I'm like, did I miss something? Because the reason why she was showing the wrists, because they were saying something like, how do you know it takes 6 minutes to cut your wrists that long and to be able to bathe in your own blood? And she shows in the wrists. I'm like, oh, is she actually Lainey? Does this person not actually die? Maybe this thing happened. And that becomes clear later. No, she's not Lainey. She's somebody else entirely. So what Jonathan's saying is completely right. Just because she shows them this information or this bodily scarring, it doesn't really answer the question that everyone still has of her.
Yeah.
Confusing.
I think it's pretty clear that even the screenwriters don't know the answer to this question because it just doesn't seem important to them. So they don't bother answering it. So then my next sentence, and again, I don't have any context for this because fuck this movie. My next sentence is, I hate Seth so goddamn much. Then it goes to cut to that night. Alice is dancing to shitty music while the other four drink and grin like idiots at her. Mm-hmm. So she has talked about this ritualistic suicide, freaking them all out, shown her scarred wrists, freaking them all out. Then we cut to her dancing while they're drinking and they're all grinning at her like she's their best goddamn fucking friend. She's revealed herself to be a Satan worshiper, but not a Satanist because she doesn't believe in organizations. And they all think her dancing is just plain charming. Alice also thinks the song is shit, so she changes it to something more up-tempo, but no less shitty, and asks Seth to dance. Elise isn't happy about it, but come on, she's a fucking goth. She's supposed to be miserable. Go put on some Smiths or something.
By the way, the music at this point, I'm like, it's the shittiest like knockoff version of Suzy Q by CCR. And I'm like,
yeah,
is that Suzy Q? Or like maybe it's just like a remix of it? No, it's just this knockoff. So if you recognize the song, it's not Creedence. It's something worse, much worse.
I have Alice kisses Seth. Elise gets mad. Alice kisses Elise. Alice makes Elise and Seth kiss. Looks like we're getting into the hedonistic Crowley territory, as in Aleister Crowley. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law type shit. That, by the way, they reference Aleister Crowley all of one time in this movie, which again suggests to me that they read a Wikipedia article about magic and Satanism. Then Alice knocks over the radio or the music system and says she can feel Gore. As in Lainey Gore, the woman who committed suicide in this hotel room in the 1970s. And then she says she can show the four how to reach Gore. Elise and Seth want to see what Alice can show them. Chloe isn't so keen. David steps forward because who the hell knows? It's been indicated that he's a Christian, so this seems particularly odd. The group pressures Chloe to join them. So this is the one time Chloe doesn't make a decision that kills everybody. She actually is resisting it. But she's the one who decided to take in Alice in the first place. So really, she's responsible. It's just at this point, she's like, I don't know, guys. Summoning Satan doesn't seem like the bestest of ideas. The thing that drives me nuts about this one is, again, David goes along with it for no fucking apparent reason. The closest I can imagine is that he feels that nothing is going to happen and he'll be able to hold that over Seth's head because David and Seth hate each other through most of this movie. That's the closest I can guess, but we never know what his motivations are. Again, at this point, I think that David could be a bad guy because he's the one who's trying to, he's also pressuring Chloe to be part of this. And he does turn her words back on her about being a free spirit and all that kind of shit. But it doesn't, I don't know. I never get a feeling of what David's character is. So I never feel like any of his choices are truly motivated. That's probably expecting way too fucking much from this movie. They join hands and then Alice starts to chant a satanic incantation. Chloe's big on eye acting. So this part I just noticed, like, the actress playing Chloe is this teeny tiny little thing, but she's got big ol' eyes and she does a lot of her acting with her eyebrows and her eyes moving around, like just crazy eye acting. Cause that's all she gets to do in this scene. She has big eyes and just does a ton of acting with them. Alice draws an upside down pentagram on the wall and David gets upset because he's not going to get that deposit back. Alice then throws up, then disrobes. She shows off scars in the form of upside down crosses on her abdomen. Then she kisses Chloe. Then she pees herself. Then she says, "I'll see you soon." And then she slices her own throat. So I didn't write this down immediately here, but when she draws that upside down pentagram, she also puts slash marks next to each of the points. So there's a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, and then the 5 tick mark. That becomes important later on. Cut to a police station. The cop has the most unconvincing method of pretending to type stuff. So this is a shot of a, like, it's, you don't have any audio from the scene. It's one of those things where it's supposed to be kind of like a dreamlike state where Chloe is being questioned by a cop, but you're not hearing any of that. And he's typing in answers, but the way he's typing, it's almost like he's just moving his hands up and down. Like there's no actual typing going on. It is embarrassing because it's a close up too. The four have to stay in town during the investigation, so they crash at David's cousin's place in the Palisades, which is a fucking mansion.
Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah. So David's cousin must be fucking loaded. The house is huge and has expensive shit in it. Elise immediately locks herself in the bathroom and cries while David and Seth drink a beer. Then they watch Beverly Hillbillies, but not with the actual sound because I guess they couldn't get the rights. So this also drove me nuts because it's clearly Beverly Hillbillies. I mean, it's the intro to Beverly Hillbillies on the television, but it's just like generic royalty-free banjo music playing on the soundtrack. Chloe has a nightmare about her intestines poking out of her, like you do. Next day, David finds an upside-down pentagram written on the bathroom mirror as he showers. Then lots of stuff breaks in rooms that the four are not in, and lots of crows die for some reason. Like, there's a dead crow nailed to a Ouija board, dead crows in the hot tub, and there's a ton of cutlery embedded in the kitchen ceiling. Cut to David parked in front of the shop full of Satan. He wants to confront the Satanists while Elise says, "I don't feel well." The Satanist shop owner shows up, so David confronts him and starts to punch him a bit. And then the shop owner reveals that they kicked Alice out, not because she wouldn't do what they wanted, but because she was, quote, "too hardcore even for us," end quote. Dun, dun, dun. It was at this point where I'm like, every fucking person in this movie, with the exception of Alice, is a Hot Topic goth. And Alice is like actual Satanist, but not organized religion Satanist. I guess Satan worshiper would be more apt. So Chloe sides with Elise and convinces David that they should. I skipped a bit. Elise screams. She's still back at the van while everyone else is next to David and the shopkeeper. So they run back to the van to see what's up. And they see that the hood has been clawed up. So there's all these big claw marks in the hood of the van. Elise has no real information to share. She says that she doesn't feel well again.
Does that reaction make any sense to you? Like, I don't know if Elise saw when these claw marks were being made, or if maybe they were invisible, or some other spirit was actually visible. Whatever the thing was, wouldn't you just, if you didn't see what was going on and you turned around and you saw these claw marks, wouldn't you just be like, "Guys, what the hell happened to my car?" Instead of screaming like you, it's like some murder had happened, because it just looks like your car's all rusty and it's all messed up.
Yeah, I mean, well, they in the house, they already encountered all the weird shit, right? Like crazy weird shit, especially the dead crows. That would have been the most disturbing thing, I think. That and all the cutlery embedded in the ceiling. And the fact that there was just all this destruction. By the way, I love the fact that David just locks up the cousin's house. Like it's just filled with broken shit.
Birds in the pool.
And dead birds in the pool and hot tub. Yeah, so that would have been the most disturbing part. So the only thing that would make sense to me is if Elise were there when the scratches were actually being made, but she never says anything about it. We just see that the scratches are there. So we don't know if she saw it happen or if she just noticed it and then she freaked out. But again, like you say, Ayaz, it doesn't make sense that she would start screaming at that point because worse stuff has already happened earlier.
Yeah.
So... I said, Chloe sides with Elise and convinces David that they should skip town. So they're going to leave, even though the Los Angeles police say that they're supposed to stay in town. Elise has no real information to share here. They lock up his cousin's busted up home and another shitty song starts to playing. There are so many scenes where these four assholes aren't really doing anything while shitty music plays for way too fucking long. And this is one of them where it's just them driving through Los Angeles. Like they had the earlier scene where they were following the truck that was very similar, but at least they were following a truck. This time they're just trying to leave the city.
You see, Jonathan, you miss the obvious artfulness of the shot because it's so much darker now. You can barely see their faces as they're traveling and the music is supposed to be soulful and they're trying way too fucking hard in this movie at this point because there's really no reason for this because you don't need to watch them leave for this long, but it stays on the shot for a good, like, well, it gets cut every couple of minutes, but it's like on screen for maybe about 3-4 minutes. You don't need that.
Most of the song gets to play. Cause my next line is Jesus. Are we going to have to hear this whole song as they drive out of Los Angeles? The answer is no, they do fade the song out before it ends, but it probably was at least halfway finished before they did that. So Elise starts to vomit after they've been telling David to pull over for like 30 seconds. And he's like, what do you mean pull over? What's wrong? Despite the fact that Elise has been saying for the last like 3 scenes of the fucking movie that she doesn't feel well. David finally pulls over once Elise starts to actually vomit. Elise reveals that she's got, go ahead.
Before we get to the vomiting. So while they're driving, we also see like these crazy aerial shots of where they're driving, so you can see that it's abandoned. So it looks like David's been driving for way more than 30 seconds to me. I'm like, how long has he been driving while Elise been saying, I'm going to throw up? Because it looks like to me, a good in the movie time, a good 10 minutes has passed, and they're now just thinking the idea to just pull over anywhere where she could throw up. I don't know why they didn't think of that at the first point, or like open the freaking window if you really can't stop. But
not super like, considerate.
I know it's not considerate, but if you're worried about, you know, the devil coming to kill you or whatever, what's her name? Landy Gore?
Yeah,
if Landy Gore was coming to kill you, I think you could throw up on the side of your own van and just go with it. But
we got to remember David is a Christian, and what would Jesus do? He'd keep fucking driving till he found the gas station. It's pretty clear.
It's true. Jesus would do.
Yeah. So I think it's in Revelations. So it says, David finally pulls over. Elise reveals that she's got 2 cuts in her, which later on I figure out are supposed to be the slash of 2 next to the pentagram that Alice drew in the hotel room before. Mm. Her slash across her throat was 1. Elise's 2 slashes in her abdomen are the 2 mark. I don't figure that out until I see the 3 mark because I'm not so wrapped in this movie that I actually fucking care what's happening. But I did go back and add in the note about it. So it says Elise reveals she's got 2 cuts in her, possibly from the inside, and goes inside a porta potty and then immediately starts to scream. So there's this porta potty that happens to be in the alleyway that they're in. She locks herself in there and immediately she's screaming.
So David slash Jesus boy is trying to find a gas station, a bathroom, some considerate place for this girl to throw up. He randomly stops, at least sort of throws up when she steps out of the car. And then there is the magic porta potty just there in this well-lit, very wide dirt alley in Los Angeles.
It's typical. Continue. Typical LA. And then I write, oh, I get it. She's the two in the pentagram that Alice made. Alice marked each point with a number. Alice was one. Elise is two. Seth opens the porta potty door and sees claw marks on the inside of the John, but no Elise. They hear what sounds like Elise from a building. Turns out it's the building from the beginning of the movie. Bum, bum, bum. And Seth runs to the rescue while Chloe calls 911, but the connection is bad, so she's not able to get through to the dispatcher very well. Turns out they're back at Santa Fe, the road where they first stopped when they got to Los Angeles and saw someone screaming from the window. I suppose this is going to turn out to be one of them. I'm absolutely right about that. Here's the thing. The big surprise things that happen in this movie, most people, I think, would see a mile away before it happens. I'm imagining neither of you were surprised to find out that the person screaming from the window at the beginning of the movie was Chloe screaming at herself.
Not surprised.
Yeah. No. Eric, were you surprised? Yeah, I didn't think so. There was nothing in this movie that was remarkably.
Okay. The birds surprising. Being the birds dead everywhere. That was mildly surprising. I wasn't expecting that. Utensils in the ceiling. Wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, that's fair. But
I don't think that was like a twist or anything. It's kind of like, oh, that was a neat little, oh, that's a good way to show that somebody's pretty pissed off in here.
I wasn't expecting the birds, but then when I saw them, I was like, oh, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Moving along.
Right. Yeah. but once you see that they're back at the same building that they were at the very beginning, you're like, oh, this is going to be one of those time loop things where it turns out that one of them is in the window screaming at themselves and is upset because they cannot get in touch with themselves to prevent this terrible thing from happening. And so it just becomes this loop. It's pretty obvious immediately that that's what's happening. Although they don't really explore that very much. It just, I think the screenwriters thought it would be cool, but there's no, for one thing, there are no characters left to have a conversation about how they are now in a loop. Yeah. That's going to continuously have them end up here. So because there's no one to have a conversation with, this ultimately doesn't really matter. No one says anything about it or remarks on it in any way. So it's just a weird thing that happens in the movie and doesn't really matter. So it's kind of a wasted little plot twist, I guess. It's hard to even call it a plot twist because it has no bearing on the plot whatsoever. So Chloe and David go into the building running after Seth, who in turn is running after Elise. Ooh, and now they hear the same music that Alice danced to back in the hotel. So it's that same CCR knockoff. Then they hear Elise crying and they run to find her. This sequence can be summed up thusly. Chloe and David run up a flight of stairs in a large building that's got a big open floor plan. They call out for Seth. Then they run up another set of stairs to the next level. Rinse and repeat a lot. And that's absolutely, I mean, like they do it at least four times, right? They run up, they scream, they're in a giant open space. Like you can see the whole floor. There are no partitioned rooms or anything. And they're like, Seth. Let's go up another flight of stairs. And they just do this over and over and over again. They eventually find Seth's destroyed phone and some of his damaged clothes with three bloody scratches marked on a nearby column. So Seth is number three. Then Chloe sees that David has four scratches on his cheek. So that makes Chloe five, I guess. And now Chloe and David start running down the stairs. Only they hear screams and kids laughing and David gets separated from Chloe and then he starts screaming. She finds his cross necklace and picks it up. Chloe moves through some sheets hanging from the ceiling that have various symbols on them, like pentagrams and the slash numbers. This is what opened the film. We saw her walking through this same sequence, but we saw her from behind, so you didn't actually see who the character was very well. And this is what we saw at the very beginning of the film. I guess Chloe is the girl screaming from the window when the group first drove up on Santa Fe at the opening of the movie. Elise seemingly runs past Chloe, then is embedded in the ceiling. This is also something that I didn't get, where the dead people kept on, or she kept on running into her friends who were kind of like stuck halfway in the ceilings for no apparent reason. I guess it was.
Is
just
that what was going
effect.
On there?
I think so.
I'm looking at this, and they have this quick reveal, and you're seeing like a glob So if you just imagine if you took some sugar and you burnt a lot of it and maybe stuck like an action figure hand in there, maybe you can kind of see what's going on. And it's so quick. I'm like, was that one of the friends? I can't. I don't know what that was. And the person who runs by, I couldn't tell if that was Alice or Elise. It's one of them.
You're right. Yeah, it couldn't. Yeah, and they have the same name. So what? Who the fuck cares?
Couldn't matter. I thought I saw her neck slit. That's why I think it was Alice.
It might have been Alice. Like, I wasn't paying as much attention at this point. To be fair, this was after midnight last night when I was, or this morning, I guess, technically, when I got to this point. Yeah, no, I watched this late last night. So I should also point out that, I think all the caramelized friends on the ceiling is the dumbest thing in a series of dumb things at this point. Then Chloe turns around and sees Alice scream at her. I'm sorry. Chloe runs to the window and screams for help. And yes, it's at the van that pulls up. So this is a loop we're seeing, except I figured it out way before it happened. So yay. Then Chloe turns around and sees Alice scream at her. So I don't know if Elise was the first one and Alice was the second one, or if Alice was both of them. I didn't pay attention. I didn't go back to check. Then she falls down some stairs. Chloe falls downstairs. Alice is fine, apart from having her throat cut and screaming all over the place. Then she sees the mutilated body of Seth. Then a big door slams shut. So she's heading toward the exit and a giant sliding metal door shuts. Then she hears pounding on the door and she hears growling. Then she finds herself in a small room with no exits, with scratches on all the walls. Then she sees the mark of five scratched on her tummy tum. David appears in the room with her for a moment. Then he vanishes. Then he's embedded in the ceiling, caramelized. Screen fades to black, comes back up, and now Chloe's mouth is sewn shut for some reason. She found a doll in the Satan shop that had a mouth sewn shut, but there was no real connection between the doll and Chloe, so I don't know why her mouth is sewn shut.
That's the whole connection. That's it.
That's it.
That's it. I mean, there's no explanation why those two things two things out of all the things that happened in the movie should have any connection to each other.
They were in the same shot. Okay. That happened. There's no explanation how the hell Elise goes from the porta potty into the building as if there's a magic porta potty. You're going to believe this.
The argument you can make is that the four are already in hell, and in fact, Alice does say, and this is probably the screenwriters giving an excuse to do whatever the fuck they want, that hell is a beautiful confusion with pain inside of it. So by calling it a beautiful confusion, you don't have to have any sort of logic or sense. So maybe what the argument is that in Chloe's mind, hell involves her having her mouth sewn shut. But honestly, that's everyone else's idea of heaven, because fuck Chloe. Whenever she opens her goddamn fucking mouth, she makes a horrible fucking decision and people fucking die. So sew that shit up.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's also missing her arms. So she has no arms and her mouth is sewn shut for some reason. A hand, like a big... like hand, kind of like the creepy child molester's hand that was inside the jar in the store. I don't know if it was supposed to be the same one, but it kind of looks like that one. Picks up her phone, and then the thing approaches Chloe as she moans and cries. A hand reaches out to her face, and then we get credits. I guess that was supposed to be disturbing, but it was really just kind of disjointed. And those are all my notes for Satanic.
Okay.
It's pretty thorough.
Yeah,
I was hoping, so back to the Elise and the Magic Porta Potty, I would hope that could be the alternative title to this movie. Elise and the Magic Porta Potty.
Yeah.
That was exciting. I liked that. I just wanted to mention this line because I just liked writing it. Alice vomits, pees, draws a pentagram on the wall, not in that order, kisses Chloe, slits her own throat. I know you said that before. And then back at the police station, somehow the police officers have MacBook Pros, which I thought was a bunch of bullshit.
Right,
I'll buy.
That's true. Yeah,
I'll buy all the rest of this. But I mean, maybe if
it was a police, the cop who types like an alien.
They might have gotten to Petaluma. They were in a
I was about to say if it took place in San Francisco, maybe I could buy it, but not in LA. Yeah. Yeah,
there you go.
One of my notes about the writer's obvious lack of knowledge about Satanists was wait, am I a Satanist? I may have actually signed up at one time. I'm not really clear right now.
So I, years and years ago, someone I know wrote a play, although a play is probably too strong a word for it. He wrote a performance piece. And the reason why I say a play is too strong a word is because there wasn't really a narrative arc to it the way a traditional play would have. But he wrote a series of performance pieces that were about Jack Parsons, who was a rocket scientist and a follower of LaVey and Crowley. He was interested in magic and Satanism. And so because I knew this guy and he wanted to do a staged reading of his work, he invited me to come in and play a character. I ended up playing Werner Herzog in something. Yeah, it was weird.
How was your Herzog? Is it good?
It was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah.
He actually had me play a couple different characters. Yeah, it was weird. There was a whole bunch of different stuff that was all mixed together, and it was also meant to be kind of a mixed media thing. Very dreamlike, but also exploring this concept of Satanism and magic and science in a way that I wasn't terribly interested in because I'm far more pragmatic and skeptical. So to me, all the magic and Satanist stuff was just kind of, it borders on silly. To me, it's people trying to ascribe meaning where there is no meaning. And it just comes across as strange to me. But I thought it was well written. The philosophy just was lost on me, but it was very clear he had done extensive research on all the characters involved. And that included even people like L. Ron Hubbard was mentioned in this because L. Ron Hubbard had some run-ins with folks like LaVey and Parsons, as it turns out. So when I watched this movie, despite the fact that I haven't really done any of my own independent research since that time, this was, 15 years ago when I did this staged reading, it just struck me as so lazy. It actually reminded me of, there's a musical called Gutenberg the Musical, and it's a joke. It's a spoof. Gutenberg the Musical, as in the Gutenberg Bible, right? The Gutenberg printing press. And the concept of the musical is that it's two would-be producers or two would-be playwrights, one of whom has written the book and one of whom has written the music to this musical, who settled on the subject of Gutenberg because they were trying to figure out somebody that would be interesting that the audience would connect with, and they did the bare minimum amount of research to write a musical. So it's a joke, right? And the two guys are putting on the musical because they say that someone in the audience is actually a producer of stage plays. And throughout the entire musical, it is incredibly apparent that they know nothing about the subject matter they've chosen. This movie felt like the same fucking thing, except it wasn't a joke. It was supposed to be an actual scary horror movie, but it felt like they had next to no knowledge of the subject matter.
Well, it seems like they hadn't watched many horror movies in the past either.
I mean, yeah,
there were just general holes in what should be a horror movie.
Well, and I said it's essentially Hot Topic, the movie, is ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah. Except they can't afford the rent. So,
right.
It's like Hot Topic if it was all knockoff t-shirts and brands.
Yeah.
And they played I don't know.
They were all,
I was trying
all
to come
wearing,
up with spelling Marilyn Manson wrong, but it's really hard to insert random vowels into that one.
They were all wearing Ned Hardy t-shirts instead of Ed Hardy t-shirts.
There we go.
So, yeah, who's that next? So I'm sorry I picked this movie, guys.
Eric is next.
I wanted to apologize for picking this movie because I still think it's probably better than Avalanche Sharks, which sounds like it might try to be funny, which I think could be dangerous. A bad horror movie sometimes can be okay, but this one was just, it was 84 minutes, and it's a long, long 84 minutes. It's a surprisingly long.
If they edited down all those driving sequences that both literally and figuratively go nowhere, it would be 10 minutes shorter. But at least you, well, I couldn't hear what was going on at the very beginning of the movie, but after that, everything was fine. The sound was fine, and the actual composition of the shots was adequate. It wasn't particularly innovative or interesting, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like no one knew where to fucking point the camera. So there's that. The performances were, I can't judge the acting because the characters were so poorly written. So I don't know that the acting was terrible considering how poorly the script was written. So I, you know, the actors might be perfectly serviceable in a decent script. So there's that, right? Cause we've seen worse movies. We've seen movies that were technically worse with bad sound, bad camera work, and atrocious acting. So this was mostly due to it just being really dumb subject matter and dumb execution.
What was that really bad Robin Hood movie we watched? That was
Ghosts of Sherwood Forest, something like that.
Man, yeah, that thing was amazing.
Yeah.
Compared to this,
the one where like there were entire important plot points that made absolutely no fucking sense. Yeah. Like the shape shifting thing where there was no reason to shape shift because no one knew what it looked like.
They were shape shifting, and then there's this bizarre like tangent about how, I think it was about socialism and how it should work. And it just goes on for like 6 minutes. And it's just like, wait, did the movie completely change? Like,
that's the first long conversation between Maid Marian and Robin Hood is extremely ineffective and high level discussion of what socialism is all about.
It was amazing. Anyway,
it had a witch with extremely arbitrary rules to her magic spells. All right, okay, so Eric, it's your turn. Do you have any? Any thoughts?
I got it. It's called Maximum Ride.
Maximum Ride?
Don't get your hopes up.
Is that the tagline?
That is the title. Genetically enhanced with the ability to fly, escape from captivity out on a high-stake mission to save one of their own. Evidently, this is based on a book, as I read the reviews, which say, it's not like the book. So, great.
So by based on a book, you mean your mileage may vary.
Yeah.
The book and the movie both have they use the word enhanced.
The first review on Netflix is pretty great. Just the first line. It was as if someone explained the plot of the first book very poorly to the writer and that the director was non-existent.
To me, it's amazing how many of the movies we pick feel like they were made by like aliens who have a general knowledge of how stories are supposed to work, but they don't understand any of the fine points. And so you end up with something that feels like it was almost but not quite written by a human being.
Aliens got a broadcast of like a 101 filmmaking class and skip the rest.
God, I hope the flight effects in this are truly atrocious.
Oh, I hope so.
that's
really what I'm waiting for.
Clearly blue screen, that would be amazing.
Okay, with that, well, I think it's time to look into the future. Next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
Guys, I don't know how to put this, but I think Maximum Ride might not just be the best movie you ever watched for this show, but the best movie, period.
You know, I was reading a Variety that there's going to be a prequel. It's called Minimum Ride, and I can't wait for this.
I ordered all the books. I don't know how many there are in the series, but I just subscribed to it on Amazon. You can do that for books now.